like to thank the organizers for giving me this opportunity to speak about our work. So it is based on, mostly it would be based on a recent paper, 1610, with Tristan McLaughlin, who is in Dublin. And also I will touch upon some stuff that we did on similar multi-soft, double-soft limits in 1504 with Thomas Close, Tristan McLaughlin, Jan Plefka, and Travaglini. Jan should be here. And to start off with, so today I'll be talking about soft theorems, and people have been studying soft theorems since a long time back in the early days of quantum field theory. And people also understand it quite well. I mean, it seems that people understand it quite well. And in fact, people understand it at very high loop order computations when people were studying QCD, and especially for computing invariant cross sections, all these computations were very useful to understand the soft theorems. So let me just start with the very basic stuff, and most probably everybody is familiar with all these. So all this is due to Weinberg. Low, Gross, Jacket, Kroll, and Burnett, all these people. So what people understood that soft, single soft limits of gluons and gravitons, and also photons, they have an universal behavior. When you study the scattering amplitude. So what I mean is that if you have an n particle scattering amplitude, say a n plus 1, b n plus 1, b 1, b 2, and in between you have some soft particles, say p gamma, and this can be written with a universal factorized form times a n particle scattering amplitude without this soft particle. And I'm specifically taking the soft limit in a particular way. So if I take the soft particle scaling with a as delta q, and my soft limit is defined as delta going to zero. So this is this was initially understood in the leading order. So in the leading order, so let's for example look at the Yang-Mills case. How? So if I now look at the Yang-Mills case, so this goes to the leading order soft factor at tree level, and I'm talking about the tree level story right now. In fact, I won't be talking at all about any loop level story today. Plus some order delta terms. And then this term is given by epsilon dot p1 dot q. And epsilon is the polarization vector. Epsilon dot pn. So the nth particle, pn dot q. And similarly, this can be written as sum over so this is just the angular momentum operator, pk dot q. This is just for the sake of completeness. I won't be needing all of this at all. And since we will be working mostly in the 4D, and so we can use spinor helicity variables, and just to like give you the form of how these things look like in spinor helicity variables, this S naught actually looks like n plus 1, 2. So if the particle 1 is going soft and it is flanked by the n plus 1 particle and the second particle, and 1, 2. So these are the structure of the leading term. And the subleading term will have some derivatives, and it goes like this.
There is no difference, photon gluon. This is not different from Abelian case, right?
Not really. No, no, not.
No, no, sorry. Yeah, so yeah. It's essentially yeah, the same yeah. as proton.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it matters. You see, it's color order. So
I mean, there's some. Yeah.
So. But color. No, in this way, it's factored out anyway. So.
And we are looking at the partial amplitude right now. So in that sense, it's similar behavior. But I will be like using a using the full colored amplitude later, so then the non-Abelian part will come into play. Okay, so this was whatever people were studied, and but recently there was kind of a new interest in this topic due to the works by Strominger. And essentially, Strominger and his collaborators were. They were trying to understand radiation of gravitons, and studying the radiation of gravitons, they realized that the Weinberg soft graviton theorem. Actually has a relation with the Ward identities of a special kind of symmetry called supertranslation. At null infinity. So this actually spawned a huge amount of work, because now we could like, previously, people were studying these soft theorems in a completely different context, but now these soft theorems actually were connected to the symmetry of the space-time. And so we now want to understand what this implies for like all that we know. And also, what he found out that for the gravity case, there was also subleading soft theorems, which wasn't which people didn't know before. And so essentially all this new work had been started from these kind of ideas. But today we will not be talking about gravitons or gravity at all, so I'll be sticking to Yang-Mills theories, and this is like n equals to zero, no supersymmetry, and at tree level. So
but why you say it's much different? It's more or less the same, because you, instead of the current which was there, which was conserved, now you have energy momentum as a conserved. So what, I do not.
In spirit, it is the same, but technically, it is a lot more complicated. Uh-huh. So I think we are still trying to understand how to like. So today I'll be talking about Yang-Mills, and we are still trying to understand how to extend that story to gravity. So yeah, I mean, in spirit, you're right. It is similar. So, for Yang-Mills, what Strominger was saying that if we have a scattering amplitude, say an n particle scattering amplitude for any four-dimensional QFT for massless particle, this was a sort of like big statement that it can be essentially described as a collection of essentially the endpoint correlation function. On the S2, this is the sphere at null infinity. So, and so what he was trying to hint at is that we can write a 4D scattering amplitude in terms of this kind of correlation functions of primary operators. And so what happens is this O operators, they create or annihilate particles. So particles are created if the energy is, and so of course we can do this because when we are looking at massless particles, we have 3 degrees of freedom, and we can of course trade, and we write down the momentum, the p mu, in terms of this. We can choose any parameterization, but finally, because of the 3 independent variables, we can always like trade whatever we have to this kind of energy and z bar coordinates. So say for example, and also another important point is that if you, why is this not something like very far-fetched? Because if you think of the Lorentz group, which you, so that acts as SL2C on the S2, which is the conformal group, and so this is the global conformal group. And so it is not really far-fetched that we can maybe think of the 4-dimensional scattering amplitudes as some kind of correlation function, some putative CFT on this S2. Now, what kind of CFT this is, we do not really know, and we want to figure that out, if this really holds, and whether we can make any kind of statement regarding what CFTs it might be.
So do the external colored states all have to be massless, or can they be massive?
Right now, we'll all be looking at the only massless case. So we are only looking at Yang-Mills with all massless states.
And so does only gluons make any statement about whether this might hold in the massive case, or is it clear that it can't hold in the massive case?
No, there have been some attempts recently, but it's still not as fleshed out, I would say. And so for understanding the massive case, what people have been looking at is trying to look at hyperbolic slicings of the Minkowski space, and there you get this kind of a CFT structure. And there had been some progress in understanding like three-point functions and also like some understanding of the four-point functions, but it is still like early days, I would say. This is a bit more fleshed out, this story for massless case. Okay, so if these are your asymptotic states, these are your all your particles, then in this correlation function, what role does the soft particles play? So it turns out that the soft particles, as Strominger also showed, and I will be like going over that again, are essentially like holomorphic currents. Inserted in this kind of correlation functions. So basically, if we have one soft particle, and the rest are all hard particles, we are looking at something like this kind of correlation function, where J will be your soft current. And this can be either holomorphic or anti-holomorphic, depending on the helicity of the particle we are taking soft. Okay. So, so the scattering problem I'm studying is, say we consider all outgoing particles. And they're scattering at, say, one particular point. And so this is your null cone, and this is the soft particle. So this can be thought of as like all these particles are crossing the S2. So this is your S2 at certain points, which are, so this is coming out, so on. So this is your soft particle. And they're all coming out with momenta P1, P2, and this is momenta Q. And finally, we could think of those as insertions of these operators on the plane at certain positions. So this particle coming out of the S2 can be parameterized as this primary field, which is at which is sort of piercing at the position, say omega i. So this omega 1, and this is say coming out at phi 2. It's coming out at omega 2. So these are the same coordinates like the ZZ bar on the S2 that I was writing down earlier, and the current at, say, ZZ bar. So this is the soft particle which is coming out. So this is the scattering picture I'm looking at. So this, I started with this scattering picture, and with the kind of parameterization for P mu I will be choosing as, we can write down this kind of a CFT, underlying CFT structure.
So it's supposed to be a two-dimensional CFT.
Yes. So it's only on the S2. So it's a two-dimensional CFT where the coordinates are parameterized by the Z and Z bar.
But Z and Z bar is just its angle, right? So you have, you know, momentum, and you have the two angle, theta and phi, right?
Right.
So Z and Z bar, my understanding is just this description of spatial momentum.
Exactly. So I can actually write down what the what kind of momentum I was.
It's just the statement that in the soft limit, it doesn't care about the magnitude of the momentum.
Magnitude is fixed by energy. Energy and ZZ bar.
So you
have everything.
So as long as the particles are mass.
Energy gives you the amplitude of momentum, the value of momentum, and ZZ bar, it's two angles.
Right. But he's saying things don't depend on the energy. They just depend on Z and Z bar, I think.
No.
The energy is there, but we want to use the...
Energy will enter, you know, in your expression for...
It will be there, but we are not...
Energy would enter to the result as well.
Not the soft factor. If you look at the icon...
No, energy of in the amplitude does enter.
Not of the hard fact. Not of the hard momentum. The energy of the soft.
No, I mean that it cancels out.
Cancels out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean the energy will be there to start off with, but as we will see, at least for the soft sector, it will kind of drop out, and we'll have a more like CFT kind of definition, which only depends on ZZ bar. And but in fact, since you were asking,
Z and Z bar are labeling what is the world sheet.
Exactly.
And the target space. So which is it?
I think I would think it as a label on the world sheet, which is on this S2.
But you're describing scattering of objects. And,
yes.
You know, which point.
So we start off where, start off at a case. Let me write down the P parameterization. So say, for example, I can choose the four vector P, and omega is the energy. I'm using omega instead of the E. So this could be a parameterization using this kind of coordinates. So these are the four components. And given this, we start off at a case when the Z, Z bar, and omega are all coordinates at the bar. But finally, we kind of hinting at a CFT where the Z, Z bar are some kind of coordinates on this world sheet living on the S2. So even though like originally the Z, Z bar were coordinates here at the bar, we finally will be ending up with the ZZ bars only existing.
Typically, to make an identification of world sheet coordinates with spatial coordinates, you choose a gauge.
Right.
Is this some kind of gauge choice for some?
Not with the way we are doing. No, there isn't any gauge choice involved right now. So.
Z bar are referring to points on the celestial sphere.
Exactly.
And points on the world.
Exactly. Sphere, exactly.
Which is an unusual setting for a certainly not string theory.
Yeah, at the level of the amplitudes, we do not really need to think of a gauge fixing in some way.
But it's equation.
Sir.
But it is. It has a meaning, right?
If you're looking at the solutions of the gauge field, and you can write down the all the equations, then you will be most choosing some gauge on the AU, most, and how it falls off, and so that way there will be a gauge fixing. But when we are looking at the perspective of the amplitude right now, it is not explicit anyway.
Yeah, but because it's not a gauge, because it's the direction where the particle goes, right? I mean, because physical meaning.
The OIs are kind of like vertex operators.
Exactly.
And they carry one label, E, and they live on the world sheet.
Right.
And then you want to somehow identify those with, the particles.
Right.
which asymptote to the same point, z is the bar.
Yeah.
Just unusual.
Yeah, I think the gauge fixing is a bit more clear if you don't use this description, but if you go to the if you write down the equations of motions in terms of the A fields, and for those A fields you can write down a gauge fixing, and but the way we are doing here from the starting from the amplitude perspective, it is kind of implicit. It is not there explicitly.
So, this is supposed to be just the tree approximation, just tree diagram?
Just tree level at this moment, yes. Yeah.
The gauge enters in the sense that it's the transversal momentum of a soft particle which enters, right? And in this sense, you know, you're projecting your initial phi mu on transfer, I mean,
excuse me.
And it is, no, I mean, because it is a kind of gauging that. That you can choose your epsilon to be transversal.
No, I'm just thinking of this identification of the world sheet coordinates, mm-hmm. z and z bar, CFT, with the target space coordinates, z and z bar.
Here it is explicit expression for p mu, right? Here.
Are you claiming that these z and z bar are coordinates of a world sheet for which you have an action?
No, I don't. I'm not saying
that's
that I have an action yet.
It's the dream, right?
It's the dream, yeah. So right now, it's essentially I'm starting from these bulk choice of parameters, and I'm seeing like the formal similarity with a putative CFT with ZZ bars. And so I'm saying that there is a hint that there is this CFT which exists, which we still don't know what the action is or what kind of a CFT is. But we will be trying to establish that this CFT structure can be, or this CFT analog of the 4D scattering amplitudes at tree level for Yang-Mills can be taken seriously. It's not just like an accident.
But it's very special to 4D.
It is special to 4D right now, yes.
And it's not going to cover all scattering amplitudes. It's only going to cover like single soft emission, maybe double soft emission with some helicity combination.
Yes, so that's what I will be trying to establish by doing multi-soft gluon limits, that it is somehow like it's picking out the soft sector, and we still do not know very well how to like extend it to all the sectors. And also like all the other like multi-soft gluons will come into picture. It's not just the single soft. So initially the story was only about single soft, and then so once you understand the single soft limits are essentially currents, then you want to understand like how what are OPVs of these currents where they give you the right CFT structures. So for those kind of things you have to look at multi-soft cases. So that's what we are trying to do, like establish that the CFT structure can be taken seriously. Okay, and also the nice thing is that with this kind of a momentum, I can also choose my lambda. Or the spinner variables with a nice parameterization. What this does is if you, and these are for the soft particles, and for the hard particles, I will be using the mu's and u's. And the nice thing about these parameterizations are, so if you are looking at these angle brackets or square brackets, they are just some scaling. They are just the distances on these two spheres, which I'll be calling Zij, and the anti-holomorphic distance for the square bracket. So just to quickly establish the single soft limit again. Plus helicity. So I can define a soft operator where again I'm scaling the momenta, the soft momenta as delta q, as delta going to zero. And so let me write down this particular form of the operator, delta, and omega is the same, omega is the energy, and I and j are the leading order, ing are the neighboring particles, and q1 is the soft particle. So in this case, I can have a nice interpretation of z minus ui minus z minus uj. So this is the form of my soft operator now. And of course, as you can see, like I took out the 1 over delta and omega from this side, and I defined my soft operator with this. So now, what is the action of this kind of soft operator or soft current on the scattering amplitude? So I will be using Curly notations for the scattering amplitudes. So acting on A with all my variables. So these are all the hard particles. So the action of the soft current on the hard particle and n particle scattering amplitude, that can be defined like this now with this previous definition, delta omega, where I take this other particle soft with all the other particles. And after some algebra, what this boils down to is by the way, I just forgot to mention, the AN I'm looking at is right now the has all the color ordered. It's not the partial amplitude. So I would write it as N minus 2 summation sigma. This is my definition of the full amplitude. So once I do that, this is the partial amplitude. L is the position I'm summing over. And sigma tilde is a new ordering. So here is the lth position. This is the trace structure. So now this can be defined as L equals to 1 to n TAL z minus UL times AN, the full colored amplitude. So with the TAL being understood to act only at the Lth position. So given this kind of a form, the action of the JA on the AN is equals to this. Now let us compare with this so in a 2D CFT, if we have a Kashmiri current, then if it is acting on a primary in representation R, then we know that the OPE is given by this. So this is the generator. And when I insert this into a correlation function, what I get is, or the consequent, and the word identity that I will be getting is this, JA, C, so, now, if you compare, as I mentioned before, that we could think of the four-dimensional scattering amplitudes as correlation functions on this 2D S2 CFT, some putative CFT of these primary operators, and the insertion of the soft current is just the insertion of a Kashmiri current. So now, comparing this expression to this expression formally, we see what we were trying to say. Like we are trying to now claim that because of the structural similarity, we could think of this as some kind of hidden 2D CFT structure, where the soft gluons, the holomorphic and the anti-holomorphic soft gluons, are insertions of either an holomorphic or anti-holomorphic Kashmiri currents. So this is our starting point, which was Strominger initially showed, that we could take this seriously and then like take it further. Okay, so if we take this to the next step, we would like to understand whether Excuse me. So for a SUN current algebra, you know from, you know CFT is this. Z12 is the difference. So we want to check whether our soft currents actually obey this kind of OPE structure. And of course, again, to do that from the amplitude side, what we'd be looking at is an amplitude with two particles going soft, or the double soft limit. And there are, right, so just a caveat right now. So when we do double soft limits for gluons, there is an ambiguity when we depending on whether we are, if we are having a mixed helicity case, then there is an ambiguity regarding if we take the positive or the negative helicity soft first. And right now we'll start off with the same helicity case, so that ambiguity will not be there. But later I will be generalizing to this case where we have this ambiguity. And
is there a notion of double soft where both become soft at the same rate?
That's also the case. That's something we will be calling the simultaneous soft limit. And there are different ways you can take this double soft limit. So one is simultaneous, as Lance mentioned. And the other is consecutive. So the consecutive means essentially we are acting, say, delta 1. So we are sequentially acting this single soft operators up to, say, the subleading order. And but for the simultaneous, it's a bit hard to compute. So we actually, in this other paper, we showed how to compute this using BCFW and BCFW diagrams, and we could have expressions up to subleading order.
But you have, in terms of amplitude, you would have emission of another soft particle which converts itself into this two soft, right? And it is another term, because you see, before it was independent emission from each line, right? I mean, of your soft particle. Now there is a term where some other gluon emitted, which goes to this two, right? And I do not see it in your expression.
So what happens is, like, so here I'm what I mean by consecutive and simultaneous is, like, you can have delta 1 and delta 2 going at different rates. But here, delta 1 and delta 2 are going to 0 at the same rate. So we are saying that's why this is simultaneous. Right. So you can also do this from the...
So the diagram where you have your pair produced by another soft particle, is it included in this expression? It's not included.
It is included. It takes into account all the contributions.
Soft particle being radiated from a soft particle.
If the softest particle is much softer than the sort of soft particle, then it looks like a Wilson line radiating the ultra soft particle.
That's true.
No, but let's say it's in any case, it's more complicated because you need to see the whole 3D structure of the Yang. I mean,
you can, in principle, write down the Feynman diagrams and do all these computations, like just like in the single soft case, as Weinberg did in the book. But it's much more complicated, especially for the simultaneous case when you go to multi-gluon soft cases.
But so everybody that's why doing NNLO calculations has to know what these double soft emissions are and how to integrate over them. So I think they were worked out. They're complicated, but they were worked out a while ago in the course of doing next to next leading order QCD.
Okay, at tree level, and of course,
tree level. Double soft emission is what you need for NNLO.
No, in a certain sense, it's like in terms of effective Lagrangian, you can say that you are not including this, but then you will get it as iteration, right? Let's say that you have just
hierarchical soft.
But the advantage of doing the BCFW is that it's much simpler, and you could like do up to like higher orders very easily. So that's how, like, you can do the simultaneous case much nicely with BCFW. But whatever we can do with consecutive, we can do with simultaneous. But I won't be like going into the details of using the simultaneous now. So I'll mostly be sticking to consecutive. It's slightly easier to understand. And to sort of make this a democratic consecutive limit, we have also defined something which we call, say, for example, if you have two particles going soft, we are defining, say, this democratic soft limit where delta 1 going to soft, delta 1 going to soft first, and delta 2 going to soft first. So whenever we will be thinking of this kind of consecutive limit to make it a more democratic choice regarding which one is going soft first and which is going second, we start off with a general case where we are looking at both the permutations, both the cases, with a certain with some certain parameters alpha 1 2 and alpha 2 1 which add up to 1, and we will sort of like see how they compare with each other. Like if you, I can write down the expression, but it's just as an anecdote. If you do the plus minus double soft case for simultaneous and consecutive, you will see that these are not the same. The consecutive and the simultaneous are not the same. Even if, and the closest this kind of a consecutive limit comes to the simultaneous one, even at leading order, is when you take alpha 1, 2, and alpha 2, 1 the same as equals to half. But they're distinctly separate. They have a slightly different character. But when you have all like same helicities, then the consecutive and simultaneous are essentially the same. They do not give anything different. And so let us stick to the all same helicities for the start. So once we do that, we can take our AM plus 2.
But you see, when you have a emission of 2, let's say that both are solved, right? Then your accuracy is actually higher, because then now you neglect in terms which are high order in the soft energy, right?
Yeah, we do.
And it's a new term which didn't exist for one. I mean, mm-hmm. new level of accuracy, because.
No, but I think what we are doing is we're looking at a.
Yeah, because here you are still kind of like independent emission law, right? Mm-hmm. And what I'm, and the term which when they needed from the soft, they are on.
Right. But when we start with these expressions and the correct expressions for the S0 and the S1s, and we already have taken into account all the different possible emissions. Uh-huh. So once we use these expressions, we already have the right starting point to address what your concern is. And
it would go all the way to this accuracy, you mean?
Yes.
Second order in delta 1, delta 2.
Yeah. 1 over delta 1, delta 2.
Not just 1, but I'm saying...
You can go up to all the orders, exactly. Yeah.
How much subleading orders are you interested in? Are you only concerned about order or not?
So we find this structure going up to the subleading currents. So this kind of nice behavior.
Means which order and what?
So it would be 1 over delta, then...
No, it's clear that it goes all the way to the delta 1, delta 2 terms.
1 over delta 1, delta 2 is the leading, so...
Order 0 term on that node.
Yeah.
I think that's what you're complaining about, right? So if you were concerned about the order 1 term in deltas, you would have had to compute also the order delta terms in your self-expansion, which are not universal. That's what he's concerned about. He said, if you have delta 1 equals delta 2, there would be a term... That would be subleading in.
Okay. I understand what you're saying. Okay.
But you're not.
Yeah, but we are not considered about this in the consecutive limit, and there are some complications when you're doing that kind of things, but we are overlooking those for this case. They do not feature. But so starting from the AN plus 2, just. The other terms. So the action of these can be written down, can be separated out in various terms depending on the structuring of the trace upper trace. And let's, CSL is the consecutive soft limit between sigma n and sigma 1, where q1 and q2 are going soft. And then there is another term, CSL, sigma n, sigma 1. Excuse me. Q2 and Q1 reversed order, and this come with the trace terms, say Q1, Q2. So essentially now you have to like collect all the different terms that you get by ordering the Q1, Q2 inside the trace and see what kind of structure they have. Plus this next term, which is So this is essentially coming from the trace term where the Q1 and Q2 are separated from each other. So essentially, we can just think of them as acting as single soft operators. And then the last term, which is kind of interesting, again, sigma n, sigma 1, Q1, Q, no, this is Q2, Q1. And this gives an FABC term, FQ1, Q2 term. And this comes with a trace C of sigma 1, sigma n.
So don't write any more because people can.
Oh, sorry. So it turns out when you look at this kind of terms where the two particles are next to each other and they are consecutive soft, for this case, for the same helicity case, they can actually be recombined into product of single soft factors. So essentially, the single soft factors have the poles, if you recall correctly, I is the soft factor. So the poles are coming from the case when the soft factors are individually getting coming close to the hard particles. So those are the kind of poles we are having from these first two terms. But the last term is a term where we actually have a pole like this, which is the most divergent term and which what we are after. And as I mentioned to you earlier, that this kind of angular brackets in the parameter we are choosing is essentially just these differences of the position of the coordinates on the S2. So what we will see is that this is the leading divergent contribution. And when I again like massage the entire expression, what we will find is that JA JB times AN equals to IF ABC Z1 to JC times AN.
So maybe it's hard to read what you're writing. So the lower term with the structure constant, where are the Qs?
So the Q2 and the Q1. The Q2 and the Q1 are essentially going into something like this. So ABC. So you're using the fact that you're just using your Jacobi, and when you're rewriting this one, Q1, let me write down on the top.
The blue doesn't work.
So you have one term here, the CSL sigma 1, sigma 2, that is coming from here. But then you can flip the sigma 2, Q2, Q1, which would be corresponding to this. But then you can combine with it another term, which is like Q1 minus Q2, which will give you the FABC terms TC. So the C is essentially that TC. So that's why you have the FABC TC. I am just rewriting these two terms and adding and subtracting these two other orientations here.
The first one should read probably sigma 1, sigma n, CSL, not n, n.
Yes, sigma
1. The first
inclusion. And, but it turns out that when you rewrite it in this way, like all this initial, like the first and the second lines all combined together into something nice and not singular at the leading order. So which actually allows, gives us this term. So it turns out we do not have this term. So we have a k equals to 0 current algebra. And so we are good, actually. We have shown that we have the holomorphic currents of the soft gluons, which represent the these Kashmiri currents. And they do obey the current algebra that we want to in a 2D CFT, but with k equals to 0. So it's not something nice, I guess. But it is what it is.
Somebody else who studied Kashmiri algebras associated with soft limits and gets a central charge different from 0. Right?
Yeah, so that was the work by Cliff and people, but what they were doing is they were doing this kind of hyperbolic embedding in the Minkowski space. And for that case, they managed to get this k not equals to 0, and it was going as, I think, 1 over the coupling. But with this kind of approach, we can never really get the k not equals to 0 case. So it's, I mean, we start with the amplitude and you get what you get. I mean, that term is just not there.
So do they also compute from this picture the same soft limits or not?
They compute the same soft limits, but they only look at the holomorphic or the anti-holomorphic case. Like as I was mentioning, that the plus-minus case has some
and the minus-minus case.
Plus-plus and the minus-minus case.
But when you are saying that, well, you're implying that you're using Euclidean kinematics or Minkowski kinematics?
We are starting with the Minkowski kinematics, but we are looking at an Euclidean CFT kind of interpretation on the ZZ bar.
No, but still, when you know P mu in terms of
CFT, yeah, it's Minkowski. It's Minkowski. Right? Yes, it's Minkowski scattering. But yeah, we would like to like connect with their story, but it seems they didn't go very far. They didn't go as far as we did. Like we could go up to higher orders and all different cases, and up to subleading orders. But they do not really have a way of getting that far. But one of the interesting things that they actually do is they kind of give, because they are doing this hyperbolic slicing of the Minkowski, they have a more bona fide holographic interpretation. And I think they could even like pinpoint, at least for the simple cases, what kind of CFT they think it could be. It's some kind of Zumino-Witten model. But there are some distinct differences. It would be nice to sort of connect the two approaches.
In their case, K, you turn off the coupling, you go to the classical limit. K goes to
Here, K is zero. And what it would lead to is also like the, when we look at the stress tensor, I'll show you that it's like the C term is not there.
Can you go back and say how you concluded that K was zero? Structure of the amplitude.
So I start from the A n plus 2, so the two particle, A n plus 2 particle amplitude. Okay. And I then take two of those particles soft by this delta 1 and delta 2 parameterization. And I know what that n plus 2 particle amplitude is. I mean, we have the expressions. So now when we are doing taking into account all the color orderings, we rewrite all the different possible terms that we could have for depending on what kind of color ordering we have. So in cases we can have like the Q1 and the Q2 next to each other, that would give some combination, some contribution from like double soft limits. But then we can have terms where the Q1 and Q2 are well separated. So essentially these are just like single soft factors acting separately. So we have those kind of terms. And then also we have another term which gives this FABC kind of a structure.
So you basically say because there's nothing more singular.
Exactly.
As they get close to each other.
Yeah.
So did you take the limit in the symmetric manner?
We took the limit in the symmetric manner. And So
because A12 and A21 disappeared on the right-hand side, so you set them equal to each other.
Yeah. Yeah, so it turns out that when you look at some of the terms, the only this term has the most divergent behavior as Z1 and Z2 come close to each other. So maybe I forgot to mention, like when I am looking at the soft limit and the soft poles were like, okay, I mentioned here. So the soft poles, the most divergent soft poles are this Q1, Q2 angular bracket vanishing, which are essentially like translate to Z12 going to zero. So Z1 and Z2 coming close to each other. And so those terms only give you this contribution as the leading contribution, but you don't get these things. So I mean, it's a honest computation and you don't get it, so I guess we have to live with it.
To get C equals zero, normally you need some kind of negative metric. It's hard to get C equals zero.
Unitary.
Yeah, it's not unitary anymore. So that's why we don't really know. I mean, it has the CFT structure, but it is this non-unitary, some putative CFT. We don't know what to do with it. But we can actually, let me show you like, so I'll quickly run through the next steps. Just to show you that this nice interpretation doesn't really stop at this particular order. So essentially, the next thing that we would like to do for a CFT is to see whether there is a stress tensor there, and we can do a Sugawara-like construction. So to do a Sugawara-like construction, we define the holomorphic stress tensor as, say, gamma, so limit Z2 going to Z1. Then we contract the indices, and then take the limit that these two are coming to close to each other. And gamma is related to the dual Coxeter number, 2H-check, and H-check would be N for the ACUN gauge theory that we are looking at specifically. And once we do that, now, so So what we are looking at from the amplitude side right now, we want to understand that, first we want to understand the TJ OPE. So that essentially means we have to look at the triple soft limit. And again, once we start from the amplitude, we look at the triple soft limit, we do this kind of a separation depending on what kind of ordering we get in the trace structure, and then pick out all the singular terms. Then what we see is that, okay, I call this TS, by the way. So TS, say Z1, Z2, I call it Z3 maybe.
Anyway, do you associate the negative velocity emission with the anti-holomorphic current or with the holomorphic current?
With the holomorphic current, with J. And the plus with the J and the minus with the J bar.
Okay, minus is with J bar. Yeah. So, it's just
the
same. So, once more, I mean, we have the right structure that we expect for a K equals to zero Kashmiri current, and if we can build a stress tensor out of those, this is what we expect in a CFT.
But the OPE of J with J bar does not have any singular terms, right?
I'll be coming to that, why this is kind of interesting. So if you just give me a few more minutes.
Plus minus data with that structure.
We can actually get the J plus J bar, JOP to be non-singular, to be non-regular. So which is something which was initially lacking in the story that Strominger and friends wrote down. As I was saying, telling you that, okay, I mean, let me just come to that in a moment.
Sure.
So now again, like, we have the right behavior when we look at this kind of collinear limit on top of the soft limits, and so everything works out. And then we can even go to the TT OPE. So essentially, we'll be looking at like the four gluon amplitude, and again, doing this whole stuff. And actually, the reason I'm kind of hopeful about whatever is happening here, because there are very, very non-trivial cancellations happening with the kind of color structure you have in front. Like some of these terms, when you look at the triple soft limit, has n minus 1 by n terms, and some have minus 1 over n terms. And when you start off with the computation, it's like you won't even believe that some of these things would cancel out. All these 1 over n terms actually do cancel out miraculously, and we to get this right structure. So you definitely know that there is some, the structure is rigorous there. So just so yeah, from here also we get the 2t by 1/3 square plus del t by z1/3, which is of course the c equals to zero case as we expect for the k equals to zero theory. It's non-unitary, no central charge. But it does seem to work. So far it does have a CFT structure. And analogously, if you go to the T bars and the J bars, so for the negative helicity, there's a similar story happening. So now our consideration was like coming from the case that in amplitudes, I mean, why would we think that this J and the J bar, which is the positive and the negative helicity gluons going soft, kind of decoupled from each other? I mean, from amplitudes, there is no reason to think along those lines. But of course, for the CFT, we do want the J bar to be regular. So then we actually looked at the plus minus case, and that is where all these technicalities regarding what kind of all the possible democratic combinations, etc., came into this picture. But I'll quickly just give you the result that we got. So we get the JA Z1, J bar B Z2, IF ABC, say alpha 1 2 J bar. So we get this kind of an OPE structure. which actually turns out people have studied, I mean, in a very limited sense, in certain non-chiral CFTs, which appear in the study of some supergroup coset models. And so it seems like, I mean, of course, those are also like non-unitary, but something like that already existed in the literature. And we could actually make sense of this kind of JJ bar OPs from our amplitude perspective. And
the J bar B really depends on Z bar, too. Is that right?
Yeah. So these are two different positions. So we are looking at the case when, like, we are OP, the Z1 and Z2 are coming close to each other. So you can see that there are these kind of phase structures that we have.
Is the bar of B supposed to really depend just on Z bar?
Sorry?
Don't you usually think of J bar as only depending?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, when I am writing the Z, I mean like the Z bar both. I'm just like shortening the notation.
So what does Z1 notation mean? You mean Z1 minus Z2 bar?
No.
So the J bar right now in this case will be.
So
no, this is Z2 bar. So the J is only dependent on
Z2. Z1 minus Z2 bar, which I don't think I've ever seen before.
Sorry?
So what's in the denominator? What's Z12? What's that shorthand for?
So that is Z1 minus Z2. But this, the J bar depends on the bar. So
and the denominator depends on Z2 and not on Z2 bar.
But there's no Z2 on the left-hand side.
It has to by dimensions, right? And I think that means your current is not chirally conserved.
No, the currents are not conserved here. The currents are not conserved.
So why are we writing ordered entities?
Yeah. Doesn't that totally change the structure of the system so it's no longer a real...
It's no longer... I mean, you can have this, but it's no longer your usual CFT. I think we believe it's a... It's because of this non-unitarity of this whatever CFT there is that you have this weird behaviors, but you actually see this kind of algebra in certain kind of non-chiral theories, and in those non-chiral theories you often have to impose this conservation of the currents by hand, and we do not have a reason to impose that by hand.
So what are the HH bar, the conformal dimensions of J?
So from our previous TJ, we would say that the J's are like just dimension 1 primaries.
1, 0?
Yeah, 1, 0, and the other one is 0, 1.
Depend on
Z
bar.
But this is non-compact, non-unitary, so
yeah.
I think this is...
Well, first of all, why is it non-compact?
Non-compact, I guess I just mean that... okay, that's non-unitary, maybe more to the point.
Yeah.
No, but where does unitarity come into discussion? Normally, this just follows from control invariance and conservation. You don't use unitarity. You use unitarity to prove that the central charge is positive, or dimensions are bounded.
In other words, you can have non-unitary CFTs that will have some operators and then they have dimension 0 on one side and then they get to be holomorphic. And it looks like that has been lost. Independently of whether unitarity is lost.
Yeah, I mean, so if you want to like look at the previous case where you're taking this the J bar holomorphic or the anti-holomorphic separately when they're decoupled, then you have a, even though it's unitary, it's a much more straightforward, even though it's non-unitary, it's a k equals to 0, but it's still a like straightforward to understand like what is happening. But when you turn on this kind of J bar OPs and they are not regular anymore, then we do not quite understand. We just know that this exists and this structure is there, and people also studied similar story in other scenarios, but we don't really know what to do with this.
Another scenario where people studied this?
Oh yeah, so there are some like supergroup coset sigma models, some kind of Wejs-Zimino-Witten models, and some people studied for a little bit when they were looking at the string solutions in ADS3 cross some other kind of spaces, and there they looked at some of this kind of non-chiral algebras, but we didn't see like much use of that. I mean, people looked at it for a few cases and that was it. I don't think like the people really know how to interpret this or do much with this kind of algebras or physically what they mean. We don't even have a very good idea I mean, what can I say about this? To start off with, it was anyways non-unitary CFT, but now I have this sort of non-regular terms, which, okay, is there, but, I mean.
Maybe you just can't describe the plus minus case in terms of Scott's Moody algebras. Is that possible?
If that could be a possibility.
Maybe you're not supposed to take the limit that way. Would you get a more sensible result if you took the simultaneous dots of limit?
No, actually, the simultaneous limit also comes to boils down to this, but we have to do some identification regarding the energies. So it turns out that you get certain terms in the energies, like say W2 squared by W1 plus W2, something like this. And so you have to assume that the energies are going to zero at the same rate. So omega 1 and omega 2, so, which is not unphysical in some sense for the simultaneous limit, but you have to put on some additional constraints. But then you get similar structure. So we have actually checked with both the simultaneous and the consecutive case that you do get this kind of structure when you actually try to look at these cases from the amplitude perspective. And
there's a limit of the double soft in the simultaneous case where you also take the two soft gluons to be very close to each other, mm-hmm. where maybe the analysis is simpler because basically you emit a soft gluon and then it has a much more collinear splitting into mm-hmm. two additional soft gluons. Mm-hmm. So you can see from the structure of the collinear splitting that you need to have an FABC mm-hmm. singular piece, it seems like. So you'd need some structure like that, but it doesn't seem to map onto what you have available in the.
No, actually, I would have thought that we are also exploring those limits because, I mean, when we are looking at this OP, essentially we are taking a collinear limit on top of the soft limit, right? The Z1 going to Z2
right.
close together.
Right.
So I would have thought that we are already exposing these scenarios that you are mentioning.
I'm not saying you aren't exposing it. I'm just saying
maybe
the picture
it's more
is
subtle
clearer and, in that yeah. limit because you only have one Feynman diagram mm-hmm. to analyze, mm-hmm. really.
No, but I would be thinking in the other way because all this emission, you know, at large distances, let's take it away. Let's consider original amplitude and expand near certain momentum, okay? Then all this contact term, I mean, effectively, what they are, it is what we substituted momentum by momentum, covariant momentum, right? Suited momentum by mu ATA, okay? So, and you know, what is differentiation in your formula, right? so once you wrote these shifts, you already wrote all contact terms, right, for emission. And then you can just iterate, you know, in terms of adding long distance. So I think that in this way, it is kind of such a contact term, it is just kind of should be simple, you know, when once you wrote depends on momentum near a certain point, you know everything about contact terms. I mean, the one which would be containing just gauge potential, right? Mm-hmm. And in this sense, this gauge term together with, you know, this emission, it gives you the total amplitude, so I mean, But what I'm trying to say is that if I'm trying to write something like effective Lagrangian, right, then not writing anything which contains a small denominator, because it's large distances, and writing only terms which are sitting at short distances, then I think that it looks like a simpler problem than, because then you can work out whatever emission is there. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you see once what I'm trying to
find. Well, I'm trying to map your words onto a statement that you can calculate soft emission with Wilson lines and the next correction with inserting the right operator onto the Wilson line. I don't know if that's what you're saying. That was.
I think it's the same.
Okay, good.
Can I take 5 more minutes? Like, I to say something quick. Another interesting observation we had, and again, we don't know what to make out of it, much sense out of it, but kind of looks tantalizing. So again, going back to the same helicity case, and so okay, so after we define the stress tensor, we could like take one more step and say, okay, I mean, what about the KZ equation, the Nizhny-Nikzer Lobachev equations, and what about the conformal Ward identities in this story? I mean, do they tell us anything interesting? But one important thing to keep in mind in this case that it's that the full stress tensor, I would expect, even for the holomorphic case, to have the some kind of stress tensor description for the hard particle. And so I was previously always mentioning S because, I mean, we are looking at the stress tensor for the soft sector. But of course, for the full stress tensor of the theory, we do expect some kind of stress tensor if we could interpret the hard particles in the same way. And but anyways, like keeping this in mind and hoping that maybe we could like drop this part and just look at the soft sector, we could write down what the conformal Ward identities imply from the KZ equations. And we would get, get an equation like this. If we start from the amplitude and look at the subleading order, and I'm dropping another term corresponding to the contribution from the soft part and for the hard part, and we are only assuming that, let's see if the soft part tells us more about the theory. So, and then, so these are your generators. So just UM and UL, these are all like the hard positions, positions of the hard particle, L not equal to N. So it seems like our amplitude should solve this differential equation. And in that case, of course, we couldn't like turn this around and solve this to get our S, which would be kind of a dream. But we were trying to see whether our known expressions of amplitudes satisfy this equation. So at least for the simple MHV case. So if we like write down the MHV, say now this is our MHV amplitude, we just rescale it. So nu would be the, so HL would be the, yeah. So HL is the power for the helicity. We are just rescaling it with these energies. Equals to 1, 2, 3. And so for this, like they say, for the 3-point amplitude, MHV, so 1 minus 2 minus 3 plus, it comes out to, so again, that these U12s are differences, the usual terms, holomorphic case, with the trace of TA1, TA2, TA3, minus trace of TA1, TA3, TA2, So when we do this, it turns out that this case, this equation is satisfied for U3, which corresponds to the positive helicity particle. But of course, it doesn't satisfy for the negative helicity particles. And we actually check this with MHV amplitudes and up to 7 points, and we think this holds, and we think like it holds for all MHV amplitudes for all particles for the positions of the positive helicities. And so this is a curious observation, but starting from next MHV amplitudes, even 6-point, it doesn't hold even for the positive helicity ones. So, but when we look at this,
start to get the plus minus emission.
Right? Sorry.
In an MHV amplitude, exactly. You can't take the minus guy to be soft because it will just disappear.
Right.
But so, as soon as you hit NMHV, then you can take a minus guy to be soft along with the plus guy.
Yeah. So yeah, that's why like this is only a holomorphic statement. I mean, this equation is only holomorphic. For the next image, we need some kind of extension of these two, and also like incorporate the non-holomorphic factor, which we have seen is kind of problematic. So ideally, we would like to find some equation which, whose solutions are these are the scattering amplitudes, if possible, and kind of hints at something like that. But just one final observation that we have. So if we look at this kind of story, there are certain cases that you have, like, say, n equals 4, we get some double trace contributions when the M and Ls are not next to each other. So for this, And for those have to vanish, because we are looking at all the single trace terms. So, and what those do is like give us a set of new identities for the scattering amplitudes. Say, for example, I can write down the identity. That I have for, say, the label m equals to 3 and for n equals to 4. And this is the double trace term TA1, TA4. So what this does is gives me a relation. So there are a lot of experts on BCJ. Now this is just 4 point, and if you use Kleiskuiff and your photon decoupling, you can rewrite all of this in a way which just gives you. Which is your BCJ relation. So which was a very interesting observation, that this BCJ expression coming from imposing certain constraints on these double trace terms vanishing. And essentially, it would seem that the BCJ is a consequence of this Kashmoudi kind of symmetry. But this is also like 4 point, and it's highly constrained. And so we do not know whether it's just a fact that it is 4 point, and hence what else can be. I mean, we found it hard to like. So similar expressions we can write down for the MHB for all n. But we found it much harder. We're still working on it. We found it much harder to like match it with the BCJ relations for n greater than 4. But there can be a, sorry?
Actually, you can check that they are nonetheless correct.
Yeah, I mean, the expressions are correct. These identities are hold for all MHV. But then we have checked. And so we know that these identities are there. So either they could mean some new identities or I don't know. I mean, we hope that it all boils down to BCJ. So in some sense, then we could link the BCJ to this kind of symmetries at null infinity.
So, but you have some linear identities in the 5-point case.
Yeah. Essentially, just like similar to this. I mean, you can. I do not have anything written down here, but I can show you later.
But presumably, you have at least n minus 3 factorial independent relations or something like that between the color ordered.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you mean you are saying like assume the BCG and just like check whether this still holds? Okay. Yeah. Okay. That would be one way to check in it, right? Yeah. We were trying to like take the expressions and just like massage them to get BCG, but it was getting too hard even at n equals 5. So we. Yeah, at least, yeah, maybe that's the right way to go, at least like the first check. But anyway, like we were kind of excited about this connection. But of course, this is only for MHV, and we cannot say anything more than that. But still, it's a nice connection, we believe. And we don't understand what to do with this. So, on that note, I have already taken up a lot of time. And just one final thing is that these similar OPE stories also extend for all the currents that you can construct at subleading level, which look more complicated, of course, which has the derivatives involved inside. But very, very similar OPE relations also hold at the subleading order. So, and also there, this mixed helicity OPEs also has a very similar behavior, and we don't know how to interpret it properly or whether it actually tells anything physical. But that's essentially like the status of this. And now what we would like to understand is how these things go over when you incorporate loop corrections, and does any of this survive because of higher divergence. And so, yeah, I mean, this is sort of the status of the things we are trying to understand. And another interesting connection which could be is we were looking at, after taking the soft limits, we were always looking at the collinear limits, taking collinear limits. So you can essentially interpret these stress tensors as like the JJ equivalent to T's as some kind of like stress tensor for gravity. And there has been some work where I think Strominger and people have written down some stress tensors at subleading order for gravity. And whether this kind of collinear limits for gluons leading to some gravitons also ties with this Steberger-Taylor picture, if anybody's familiar, where they were looking at linear relations between amplitudes with gluons and a graviton, and as linear combinations of amplitudes with gluons, where like graviton can be replaced by collinear gluons. So finally, we would also like to understand whether like somehow this can be double copied onto graviton story. Does this symmetry structures somehow like double copy to BMS or something like that for gravity? So those are the big open questions we would like to understand here, mostly coming from the symmetry aspects. Thank you.
We have lots of questions. Are there any more?
Yeah.
So if you consider double soft limits and n equals 4 Sully angles for the scalars, in the same type of symmetric manner that you were setting it up, you actually reproduce the leading soft mass behavior of the Coulomb branch amplitudes.
So by
supersymmetry, wouldn't you expect there would be some relation to that also from your double soft limits? If you consider some supersymmetry relations on the amplitudes?
There should be. Yeah, we haven't thought about those. I guess there should be some relations.
And if there is, then it's weird with a connection to a 2D CFT at the boundary.
Yeah. You were looking at the double soft limits for these Coulomb branches, right?
Yes. Not on. So you take the double soft limits of the amplitudes.
In n equals 4, and then you get
the
single.
It's all in n equals 4, but it's at the origin of moduli space. Mm. And then taking soft limit probes the surrounding moduli space. You get the leading soft mass, so leading small mass behavior, the massive amplitudes of the Coulomb branch when you do it for the soft scalars.
Only at the leading order?
No, you can actually reproduce and resum the entire massive propagators, but you need multi soft limits, not just double soft.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, I think that sounds very interesting. We should look at that. Thanks.
Going back to the CFT, there is a model written online, first the gravity model written by David Skinner, Tim Adamo, and Eduardo Caselli, is framing sketching amplitudes in Minkowski space as correlation function of a certain CFT living in the celestial sphere. Later on, they wrote the same model for gauge theories.
Good that you mentioned. That was Caselli and Tim who wrote that model, the worldsheet theory only on like the null infinity.
Yeah.
And we believe that there should be some connection between what we are doing and what they are doing there with these vertex operators. I was just like talking to Tim, and there wasn't any sort of like big insight there, but it seemed like there should be something. I cannot say anything more concrete than that. Because they really have this worldsheet theory, so we should be able to see this kind of JJ bar behavior or all these weird things coming out from their story.
Yeah, I think they haven't looked at double soft limits with JJ bar or PU, right?
Yeah, and also I think they have some nice interpretation for the subleading case, where they were like looking at this subleading case was looking at some kind of rotation on their charges that they had, so which I don't know like what it means physically here. So because we also have some nice structure for the subleading case.
Yeah.
And which I didn't write down, but I believe they have some nice understanding of the subleading case.
Like dating for the leading part, they also can insert.
Right.
Some super relationship.
I do think there is definitely some connection between these two stories.